Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perreault, and I'm very pleased to have with me via Zoom today the Minister of Rural and Economic Development, Goody Hutchings. Minister Hutchings, thank you so much for being here on Lake 88 today.
Bob, it's my pleasure to be with you. Wish we could be there in person, but please, we're just having an informal chat, so please call me Goody.
Well, Goody, that is exactly what I will do. There, you've got quite the ministry, because when you look at Canada as a whole, I know we have the population density that is in the big cities, Toronto, Ottawa, you name it, but there is so much rural land in Canada. And obviously, we're a rural riding here in Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston. So it would be really great if we could hear from the government on some of the plans of some of the issues that we are facing. We're coming up to a provincial election, as you're well aware, in June. Then we've got a municipal election as well. These are issues that are going to be touched on. And they were touched on in the last federal election. So I'm just going to ask you your thoughts on a number of things, and we'll hear where we're at.
Great. So Bob, look, let me tell you a little bit about me first.
Sure,
I'm from Western Newfoundland and Labrador, a beautiful riding. It's called the Long Range Mountains. The land mass is bigger than Switzerland. I have over 200 communities. My smallest community has 42 people, and my largest doesn't have 20,000 people. It's a real mix of industries. Tourism, of course, is huge. I'll get a plug in for the incredible national parks and beautiful beauty in my riding. Thousands of miles of coastline. So, of course, the fishery is important. Forestry is important. And mining is important. Believe it or not, agricultural. People say, oh, my golly, I thought Newfoundland was a rock. No, we have incredible agriculture there as well. And, of course, many, many small businesses. So it's a very diverse riding. And I also have five communities that are accessible by boat only. So I truly do understand what rural is and what really rural and remote is. And when I was asked to take on this role last fall, I was truly honored and humbled. And as I've gone around the country, either in person or virtually, I've done many, many Zoom calls with many groups from coast to coast to coast. That's one thing that they say to me, oh my golly, you get what rural is. And I'm like, yeah, because that's been my life, all my life in beautiful rural Western Newfoundland and Labrador. So as I do go around the country, and long before I was appointed as minister of this portfolio, I was also parliamentary secretary for tourism and small business. And then I was parliamentary secretary for women and gender equality, and as well, rural economic development. So I had a chance to get around the country in those positions as well. And it was loud and clear in rural Canada. And of course, as you alluded to, you know, the urban centers have the population, but rural Canada has a beautiful land mass. We've got 20% of the population. We contribute 30% of the GDP. But the number one issue that we've heard loud and clear is connectivity. That in order for rural Canada to have its equal foot in the door, its equal piece at the table, we have to have reliable, affordable, high-speed internet. So I've been so delighted that our government has led the charge in this. We've spent more money in 2015 in connecting Canada than any other government combined. So we get it, how important connectivity is. And I think the pandemic showed us, Bob, that you needed, you know, connectivity for the kids now doing their homework around the kitchen table, for you working at home, for you and others accessing goods and services online, and frankly, for keeping in touch with loved ones. So the pandemic really brought that to the forefront. But the other thing that I love to talk about is all the opportunities out there with high-speed internet. You know, for last week, I was in Alberta and British Columbia, and the farmers are telling me how with great technology advances, how they need internet in their farm fields. You know, I've heard myself from the fishermen in my riding, how technology is involved in the equipment that they have on their boats. We need high speed internet. So we need that to grow those numbers, also to grow our population numbers. And another thing I think the pandemic has showed us is that people are seeing what you and I've seen all our lives, the magic and the charm of living in a rural area. Like people say to me often, oh, how do you like living in Ottawa? And I say, I don't live in Ottawa. I live in Newfoundland. I work in Ottawa. And I think people, as you and I were chatting earlier before we started this, you know, you've been working from home. And there's a segment of the population that wants to work at home and they want to be in big open spaces and have their family around more and appreciate nature and get out of the bigger communities. And we're seeing population surges. You know, I know in Atlantic Canada, in Nova Scotia, their population numbers have gone through the roof and it's people moving to rural parts. So connectivity is key for so many reasons. The next thing we hear after that in these numerous roundtables and discussions I've had is housing. Housing is so critical, and I'm proud to be part of a government that has an incredible rapid housing program. We've invested $7 billion in various housing programs. And then there's which is great through CMHC, which is helping affordable housing. But then I've also discovered in my travels around the country is that we also need housing related to economic development. I know Grossmoor National Park is in my backyard. You need to Google it. It's pretty amazing. And they keep saying, oh my golly, we need workers, but there's no place for the workers to live. And we hear that in various other industries and in rural Canada. You know, I've got a poultry plant and, you know, I need another 20 workers, but I need help in finding a place to live. So we need to look at our programs to see how they can be related. Yes, social housing is desperately needed. We have too many homeless and kids couch surfacing and all that, but we surfing, but we also need to make sure that we have housing that's related to economic development. And then the other part that we hear that, so the top three, and I'm going to run three and four together, is immigration / workforce, because in a lot of rural Canada, we have an aging workforce. And in some areas, the younger kids aren't moving away. They haven't seen the magic that you and I have of living in rural. You know, so we have an aging workforce. So we need a workforce. And then how do we encompass immigrant families that want to work in rural and live and settle in rural Canada? And I'm delighted to be working with Minister Fraser on that. He's just been out of the gate and dealing with not only the Afghan issue, but now, of course, the terrible, terrible tragedy that we're seeing in Ukraine. You know, he gave us an update today. So far, Canada's welcomed over 10,000 Ukrainians. And, you know, there's many, many more to come, sadly. And how can we welcome them, and how can we welcome them in rural parts of our beautiful country?
There's a lot to unpack in there. And there's a couple that I think our listeners really want to know about. You mentioned housing. That to us goes right into, and to you as well, affordability. And it's not only housing, and I could throw a bunch of stats at you and about what has gone up and what hasn't, but people are going to the grocery store and they're seeing that the price of food has gone up. They're going to the gas pumps and they're seeing that the price of fuel is through the roof. And then on top of that, they've either got to pay rent or they've got to pay their mortgage. It's all hand in hand. Everything goes together. And then there are people who say, and you have to let me finish this part. There's people who say that the internet is a luxury for some people. High-speed internet is a luxury for people. But you hit the nail on the head when you talked about agriculture, because it's not about being able to stream or whatever while they're out in their fields. It's about e-commerce. There's all of these things that are wrapped up together to create this massive umbrella that they call affordability nowadays. And really, people are just being hit every way that they turn. And they're looking for immediate relief. So how do you address that? Do you work with different ministries and then, you know, try to take it through the lens of a rural landscape?
Yep, I do. So let me chew off a bit of those for you. So
please do.
When we're looking at the contracts that we're awarding under the Universal Broadband Fund, affordability is key. That's one of the criteria that we judge on. So that is key. And, you know, you probably know that we last summer we invested with Canada and Ontario. It was $1.2 billion in joint funding, 50-50 by both governments to make sure we get all of Canada connected. And of course, that means all of the $1.2 billion was between us and Ontario to get the remaining communities in Ontario connected. And affordability is key. Not all that money is going to the big internet service providers. You know, I had an update a few weeks ago. A third of it is going to the small ISPs, a third of it's going to the big ones, and a third is going to Aboriginal Indigenous communities. So, and again, I want to guarantee your listeners that affordability is key. That is the one key in awarding these contracts. And look, the cost of living in Canada has risen drastically. And during the pandemic, it seems to have hit everyone, but it's not isolated just in Canada. You know, much of the developed world is facing so many similar issues. There's the bottlenecks of supply chain, fluctuating with energy prices, and a lot of it is related to the pandemic. But, you know, we have been there for Canadians. And I know sometimes people go, oh my golly, you know, I went to the grocery store and, you know, milk was now $4.50 for 2 liters. And, you know, last week it was $4.20. But there are so many things out of everybody's control. But I just want to remind Canadians that, you know, one of the first things we did when we formed government was lower the taxes on the middle class. And we raised it on the wealthiest in the country. One of the programs that I'm so proud to talk about is the child care benefit. That puts money, and it's needs based. And that was the big difference with our program for child care versus the previous government's program. Like I know when I was home last week, there was a young woman in my office, and she was almost in tears because she gets $12,000 a year. She had an issue with her partner, and we were able to fix it. And she said, oh my golly, this now means $12,000 a year to me with the child care benefit because it's needs based. During the pandemic, we were there. And I just want to say, Bob, there was no playbook written on a pandemic. My golly, you know, when the war was over, Churchill stood on the balcony and said, you know, the war is over. Our boys are coming home. And we knew it was over. But, you know, there's been no playbook written on a pandemic. And we were there for Canadians to help in, you know, wage subsidies and in help for not-for-profits, for women's shelters, for big business, small business. You know, we were there to help Canadians to get them through. And now as we are getting to the other side of this pandemic, and as I say, learning to live with the new normal, whatever that's going to be, you know, we can wean off these programs, but we're still there to help those, like the tourism and hospitality industry was one of the hardest hits. They're going to be one of the last to recover. So we're still there with the Tourism Relief Fund and other aspects of funding to help them get back on their feet. So the other part that everybody talks about so much, of course, is the price of gas. But we've got to remember that this tragic, terrible war that's underway in Ukraine, which just rips the heart out of every Canadian. And I know I can speak on behalf of every single Canadian that our thoughts and prayers are out to the people of Ukraine. We've all seen the terrible images on the newscasts. And it, like I said, it just rips your heart out. But, you know, Putin has caused such a disruption in the oil and gas market with this terrible illegal invasion. And we're seeing the effects of that now. So there's so many issues that are out of government's control, but, you know, when you look at the stats, we've gotten more jobs back than prior to the pandemic. You know, are the jobs the same in rural? Not quite. We haven't got all rural jobs back yet, but you know, that's my job too. And as you alluded to earlier, I touched so many different government departments, and I do regularly, you know, just in our brief conversation, you know, it's, you know, yes, I'm the lead on the file for connectivity, but, you know, Minister Hussein for housing and Minister Fraser for immigration and Minister Qualtrough for workforce. And then when we get into, you know, environment and natural resources, it's Minister Gibo and Minister Wilkinson. And, you know, with the recent labor dispute, I was working hand in hand with Ministers O'Regan and Algebra because the impact that rail dispute could have had on the agriculture industries, which is so vital, especially for rural Canada, you know, that's what we've got to make sure that we keep going. So yeah, I feel like the quarterback sometimes because I'm putting my hand into so many different departments. And that's the joy and the magic about this portfolio is, yeah, we have lots of challenges. I'm not going to sugarcoat that at all, Bob, but my God, we have such opportunity. And that's what I really want to focus on is how can we find these opportunities now, you know, how can we make sure that our agricultural industry is ready to step up where they can, you know, where there's going to be shortages now of wheat and canola and others in Ukraine. But we also have to be very cognizant of climate change, Bob. You know, last week when I was in BC, I was just heartsickened when you drive down one valley and you see the devastation from the fires, and then you go around another corner and you see all the washouts from the floods. you know, it's going to be billions and billions of dollars to help them get back on their feet. And of course, the drought in central Canada last year, I know on a much smaller scale, we had washouts in my riding with an incredible storm and surge, you know, where the ferry lands in Newfoundland and Labrador, that road was washed out and my province was cut off from their way of accessing goods for nearly a week by the time that got rebuilt. So we need to look at climate change. And as we build back from all these disasters, we've got to think, I think, build forward in our thinking. You know, when we're building, we've got aging infrastructure, but let's make sure that when we build and replace, we're building for 30 and 40 and 50 years out, because as I know firsthand in my riding, where a 2-meter culvert was fine 20 years ago, now you're going to need a 4-meter culvert. But really, should we put in a 6-meter culvert so that this infrastructure is good for years down the road?
Absolutely. And I know our time is almost up, but I'm just going to get you to comment on one more thing, if you could.
Sure. Yeah.
And that is specifically on housing. You mentioned earlier, there's a number of people who are discovering the beauty of rural Canada. No exception here. And really, we're very happy to have them in the area, that's for sure. I have some personal friends who've moved out of the city. I grew up, born and raised in Ottawa, moved out here. I'm never going back. Plain and simple. I think you can relate when you were saying people telling you that, hey, you live in Ottawa, and you're like, no, you have your home. Basically, what has happened, though, as you are well aware, is the price of housing has gone up everywhere. And here, to buy a home, the prices have just been incredibly high. And that has left people who lived in this area before unable to find a home to purchase or to find affordable housing to rent. We heard so much about affordable housing from the NDP, the Conservatives, and of course the Liberals over the course of the last campaign. We are going to hear about this. It is going to be one of, if not the largest issue in the upcoming provincial and municipal elections that are coming here. When you speak to our listeners in this area and other rural listeners, of course, what can you tell them to assure them that help is coming when it comes to affordable housing from the federal government? I know it's a 3 or 4-pronged approach.
You're right, Bob. There are so many tools in our toolbox, right? And I think one of the aspects that we have to look at, there are many seniors that want to stay in a home, in their own home, right? Or a home. They don't want to go to a long-term care home. You know, they want to downsize, I guess is the proper word. So, you know, perhaps we have to have a fund that's focused on building, you know, smaller downsized homes for seniors. So then there's another covey of homes that are available for younger families and workers coming into work. I think we've got to look outside the norm, what other construction methods are out there that we can use to get quick housing up, you know, that's energy efficient, that's relatable and affordable for people. Who do we partner with? Do we partner with churches? Do we partner with businesses? Do we partner with not-for-profits? Who else is out there that we can partner with to get this on the ground? Yes, municipalities are a huge key part of that. You know, sometimes a municipality can contribute the land. Maybe you have to work with a business or a not-for-profit to put the other pieces in place and make it easy. We need to make it easier to make sure that we can get this on the ground and in place for people. Housing is a huge issue for young, for old, for social housing, for new families, for new immigrants coming. But by collectively us all working together, I think we can come up with a variety of plans. I know in my riding, there are some old vacant schools. Well, maybe we have to have a plan to revamp and refurbish, you know, schools or hotels or other buildings that you can turn into accommodation. I know when I was in BC last week, I saw a great project. It was a small business, and on the top that they built the new building for to house their business, and on the top two floors they built 10 or 12 800-900 square foot apartments for their employees. So is that an incentive that we need to look at when we're looking at business development growth to say, okay, well, you know, if you need housing for your new workers, well, how can we help you add another story or two and include that? So I think we've got to think outside the box. I know Minister Hussein is working with CMHC on so many different aspects, but I want you to assure your readers, that your listeners, that, you know, we do understand how vitally important this is, and we will have many tools in our toolbox to address it for the residents of Perth and all Canadians, especially rural Canadians. That's my focus, Bob.
There's a big interest around here for tiny homes. And I know that that is something that the federal government has looked at in the past. There's been some great initiatives for tiny home communities, for seniors, for vets who are now homeless, and so on. I hope that's on the agenda too.
Yep. We've got, like I said, we've got to think outside the box, right? And maybe some type of modular home. Maybe, you know, out west, we saw some homes made out of old shipping containers that were insulated and turned. I think we've got to think outside the box and make sure that when we do have our housing plan, that, trust me, I'll be fighting for and making sure that we get a good percentage of that money for rural Canada.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who say high-speed internet is great, but if you don't have a place to live, then what's the point of it? So,
that's true.
Again, it all goes hand in hand. Yep. It's been a pleasure to speak with you today. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us here. I know our listeners appreciate hearing things from the federal government directly. So, Minister Goody, I can call you Goody.
Yes,
thank
you.
Thank you so much for being with us today. It's very much appreciated.
And look, thanks for reaching out. Reach out anytime, Bob. Love to give you an update later on, maybe after the budget, and talk about, you know, what's in the budget that's really going to help rural Canada.
I would absolutely love that. And we can also talk about the results of the provincial election and new partnerships that may be forming between the federal government and whoever wins.
That's right. And you know what? I'm all there to work with all levels of government, municipal, provincial, and of course, Indigenous groups. By partnering, we can certainly get together and do what's best for all Canadians. But like I said, my focus is rural Canadians.
Federal Minister of Rural Economic Development, Goody Hutchins, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
You too. That's going to do it for another edition of In Focus. Thank you so much for being with us today. Take care, stay safe, and have a wonderful afternoon.